When it comes to commercial banking, relationships matter. At Associated Bank, we've got you. With a dedicated team of relationship managers helping you secure financing to best serve you today and tomorrow. Visit associatedbank.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
We're on with Doug McClure, Senior Vice President and Team Leader in Associated Bank's Commercial Banking Group. Doug, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Steve. It's good to be in the studio.
Good to see you in person as well. I want to focus our conversation in on just how things are going in the region. Talk to us a little bit about what you're hearing from clients about how they feel about the economy and their business moving forward this year.
Yeah, sure. We just ended up 2024 with obviously a new change in administration. So there's always some, you know, curiosities for what to expect from the new president here. But it feels like it's been flat to stable in 24, and we expect another 2025 that's probably pretty similar. Again, it's not highly negative, but there's not tons of optimism where you might see 5-6% growth either.
Mm-hmm. I know we talk a lot about, you and I have had these conversations about interest rates and jobs and unemployment rates and stuff like that. Is that the kind of stuff that they're focusing on, or do they have sort of a bigger picture from a higher elevation?
Yeah, a bit of both. I mean, obviously they are facing a lot of, you know, macroeconomic pressures that we've seen over the last couple of years. You mentioned interest rates as one, labor constraints as another, wage pressures for sure. But as far as the macro versus micro approach to my clients, it feels like the further you zoom in for these accounts and the clients that I work with, it feels like there's been a bit more optimism within their own business. You zoom out a little further, there's a little less positivity about their broader industry that they operate underneath. And then you look even further out, there's a lot more negativity for how my clients are seeing the macroeconomic trends they're fighting. But again, I think that's a very interesting thing to explore further into.
So these companies feel good about what they're doing on a local level, but they're concerned more broadly on maybe a national or international level.
Absolutely. I think especially regionally here, it feels like the Midwest has done pretty well as compared to the broader spectrums of the East Coast and West Coast. But, you know, furthermore, I feel like we all read these negative news headlines that tend to overly focus on negativity because negativity sells. But again, you keep zooming in further, it feels like there's been opportunity for growth, not only in 24, but, you know, potential for growth in 25.
When you talk to these companies, how do they gauge success? What is going to be a good year for, let's say, company A that you talk to?
Yeah, I hate to say, just markets being stable and staying flat probably isn't a bad outcome. In these capacities of, call it sideways markets, you could call it stable, you could call it sideways, the flat growth aspect of what we're seeing here, again, doesn't feel overly negative, but just to you know, keep pace with what the economy is doing, 1-2% growth is not a bad outcome here.
I know, back to those macroeconomic trends, the interest rates and jobs and that sort of stuff. Tariffs is another one, right? They could have an impact on those local businesses.
I think not just local, but of course the larger publicly traded peers as well. I think the big question marks we have are not just the tariff implications. If you've got an international supply chain, if you're sourcing product from overseas, you know, from Canada, from Mexico, from China, what does that impact your cost allocation? But when you combine that with the offsetting potential enhancement of either tax reductions or, you know, accelerated depreciation is another often utilized tax piece that the Trump administration is likely to re-implement. So it's almost the competing battle between the question mark of tariffs versus potential savings from taxes here.
I found a really good article talking about some of this strategies for success in 2025. I know this article's focuses on manufacturing specifically, but I think we might be able to extrapolate some of this for other commercial businesses as well. And one of the things at the very top of the list is the focus on profitability, but also upskilling the workforce. What does upskilling the workforce mean?
Well, I think I'll address your second question first. We could circle back to the first, but upskilling the workforce is, you know, when you have an area of sustained labor constraint for the last 3 to 5 years of trying to find qualified and adequate labor, the focus on retention is probably the most important, more so than growth. Obviously, it's a lot easier to keep employees happy than to try to find new engaged employees to join your workforce. So as it relates to upskilling that workforce, it might simply be just further education. Can they work from one line of product fulfillment to another? Or how do you advance their career across, you know, and up into the business here. Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting. And I know, in my business, in journalism, we might go to a seminar or we might get some more journalism training or something like that to do a different job. Is it the same thing in manufacturing?
Absolutely. And I'd say it's a lot more technical skills than it would be engineering.
So back to that first one, the focus on profitability. I'm sure a lot of different things go into that, right? It's not just, hey, we're going to make money this year.
Yeah, you rewind, 2 years ago, the inflationary environment we found ourselves within allowed for a lot of cost increases or price increases to be soaked up by the clients because they wanted their product and they wanted it yesterday. So it was really more of a demand-driven approach. We're at a stage where we're seeing price increases less likely to be passed on to the full 100%. So where we think about profitability or maintaining profitability, it's not just about trying to pass off price increases, which we've seen in energy. We've seen that in healthcare costs for sure for the labor base. But it becomes a bit of a cost containment strategy. So are you dual sourcing? Are you sending out multiple invoices or offers to make sure that you're getting the right quality and the right quantity of all your vendors?
One of the things you mentioned was the potential tax breaks, tax savings that are going to be coming. I know there's a caveat to that, and that is, sometimes Congress takes a long time to act and approve some of those things. Is it something that a company then would be just sort of conservative about, not planning for immediately, but maybe in the long term?
Yeah, I think that we've already seen the beauty of the new administration, whether you want to take the political stance aside, is we've already seen what he's done before. So I think there's a lot of things that he would be reintroducing, not introducing for the first time. So you can almost look back 4 years to see what that prior playbook looks like. But what I will tell you is the quantity of quote unquote budgets or plans that my clients have for 25 is probably 2 or 3 times X they normally see in an average year. So I think to get ahead a lot of these strategies, they're planning for, A, B, C, D, and E different initiatives, depending on what comes their way.
What are some of the potential roadblocks or speed bumps that might be in the path for some of these businesses moving forward?
I think the biggest concern for a lot of these international sourcing companies is we got out of an era where we saw high inflationary pressures. Do these new tariffs become re-inflationary? I think that's the largest concern on all of my clients and the broader financial advisors that we talk mm-hmm. to, their biggest concern.
I've actually seen reports of some companies importing stuff now, stocking up, thinking that those tariffs are coming and that they would negatively impact their business. Is that happening locally as well?
It has, and we've seen some inventory stock both in Q4 and early Q1 here. I don't think it's to the level that a lot of folks are doom and glooming about, but it's clients just, again, getting prepared in advance of some of these conversations. And mid to longer term, it's also about thinking through alternative ways of sourcing. Can you find folks more local as compared to the international sourcing that they've got today?
I know I've talked to some of your colleagues about the impact of artificial intelligence on businesses. In manufacturing and some of the commercial areas, it's more about automation, though, isn't it? And is that going to be a player moving forward?
I think automation in terms of moving to fulfillment through capital sources or machinery and equipment has been a continued trend over the last 10 to 20 years, and we'll continue to see that. So I think the short answer is yes. I think the longer answer also is a lot of our middle market companies that we work with, they've all been advancing and progressing their ERP planning resources. And so getting better use and information out of the data that they can collect. And so I think the one question mark that we have and a lot of excitement for remains, well, what can this artificial intelligence really suggest for how to improve, said automation strategies?
Mm-hmm. I want to switch gears for just a little bit, because I'm guessing that a number of the companies that you deal with are probably family businesses, family-owned businesses.
Yes.
Do you have conversations with them about how you protect those businesses, the legacy of those businesses moving into the future?
I love the word legacy, first of all, because, a lot of these folks, this is could be second, third, fourth, fifth generation families. Their main source of income, their main source of wealth is in that company. And so whereas, myself might be invested in a broad array of S&P, related companies, they have basically one stock in the business that they own. It just happens to be, family concentrated. So there are a lot of dynamics that go on with working with a dad, a brother, a sister, you know, the daughter. And so, you know, as it relates to family planning, it's not just about trying to figure out what the 2025 budget looks like. It's trying to understand what does the next generation of leadership also look like. So it's not just that short-term conversation. It's the long-term strategy to make sure you're set up for success for your family's business.
And it must be interesting when there's not a clear line of succession in one of these companies. It's if a family-owned business suddenly doesn't have any more family members to take over, what happens next?
There are a variety of options for that. And it's one of the more curious parts and aspects of the profession in which I operate underneath is to, you know, provide those opportunities to connect, you know, whether it's future investors, maybe it's discussion about outright sale. But you almost have to look at a family concentrated ownership in, like, well, how old are they? What is their risk tolerance? What is their legacy request, right? I mean, you could sell to private equity or just IPO on the public markets and maximize your liquidity, or you might want to find a more appropriate way to help management help buy you out. So these might be non-family members that would be in the business that try to absorb that stock. And, you know, another great alternative that we've started to see a lot too is ESOPs, employee stock ownership plans, where the employee base pools up and buys it through a different vehicle. It's a very interesting strategy.
Interesting. The employees become the owners.
That's
of the
exactly
company.
Right.
So I don't want to put you on the spot here, but if you had to pick a winner or pick winners this year from commercial businesses locally, what industries do you think are going to come out on top?
You know, I'm going to steal a little bit of thunder from John Rogers that I heard speak in January at an executive forum. He said it was the year of the small cap. So I'm not going to pick an industry, but I will say is I'll pick a size. I think as it relates to smaller cap, large, you know, publicly traded companies or the family businesses that I work with, the tax incentives that they might see are just more, they are highlighted more within those smaller businesses than the larger companies. And I think how quickly we are moving, it's called on the artificial intelligence side. These larger companies, yes, they have more capital, but they're less nimble. So I'm excited for a lot of the smaller companies that I get to work with because they can just move more quickly in a very adapting environment. So I'll go small companies.
All right, good. We're going to mark this down and we'll come back and see how we did later.
Perfect.
All right, Doug, great conversation. As always, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one?
Sure. You can always reach out on LinkedIn to me. Otherwise, you can shoot me an email at doug.mclure@associatedbank.com.
All right, Doug, we'll talk to you next time.
All right, thanks, Steve.